Welcome to episode 170 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on March 20th, 2020. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, Ben and Scott are joined by Alex Newhouse to discuss Azure Resource Manager templates, PowerShell, and the Azure CLI, all revolving around provisioning new resources within Azure. Let's dive into the discussion. Here we are, Scott. Another week, another Friday, and we have not been out of the house in... Have you been out of the house in 2 weeks? I snuck out for a quick bite to eat 6 days ago, but other than that, I don't think I've been out of the house in like 14 or 15 days.
I was in Vail, Colorado last week in hotbed of coronavirus.
And now you are like deathly sick.
And I am deathly sick. Today is, let's see, I'm on day... 4 of running a fever and shakes and all the fun things, but I got out of bed to do this.
All right. Well, I'm glad that we are important enough to get you out of bed. And we are joined by Alex Newhouse too. We have a guest today because...
Gentlemen.
Yes. How are you? Because nobody has anything else to do except stay in their house and record podcasts, right? Everything is canceled. The world has been halted.
Yeah, it feels so... Hello, I'm Alex, and I am really sorry you're not feeling well, Scott. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. I don't know. I like to say that I was born in 1820 and I have never in my lifetime seen anything like this. I live in central Massachusetts and going out on the roads is eerie. There's no traffic and the Boston area is known for its terrifically bad traffic. So I don't know. We're in lockdown here. Schools have been closed for the week and they're another 2 weeks going. And in the city of Boston, the mayor actually stopped construction. There was a building boom going on. So it feels a little like devolution in some ways, you know, economic and social. But, you know, I have the best of it. I get to work from home for a couple weeks instead of going into Boston and working at my client. So not bad.
Yeah. And I just saw, if you're in the U.S., breaking news. Tax day. You have until July 15 to file now.
Woohoo!
So you can put off filing your taxes for another 3 months in completely unrelated cloud news. Yeah. Anywho, it's just been wild to see everything shutting down here in Jacksonville. Both Scott and I are in Jacksonville. So same thing here. Schools are shut down for at least another, I think, 3 weeks. I think pretty much everything in Jacksonville is not happening until at least April 15 now.
Yeah. Yeah. My kids will start remote school next week. That'll be interesting.
Have fun. You know what I like to say now that I've seen this meme is my wife and I, we started homeschooling our kids before everybody else had to start homeschooling their kids.
There you go. Small wins, huh?
Yes, it is. Anyways, should we dive into our topic? Today we wanted to, Alex, send us a tweet. This is what happens. If you tweet at us on Twitter, you may find yourself on the podcast. He wanted to get on and debate the whole ARM template versus PowerShell and we maybe even some CLI stuff in terms of Azure resources. And from this point on, I may just let you guys go because even before we started recording, you guys were having fun with it. And as I hang out in that Office 365 space a little bit more, this is a much more applicable topic for you, Alex, and for you, Scott, than what I have done with Azure.
Oh, come on. You can be taught. You'll pick something up out of this.
Oh, I will most definitely pick stuff up and I may try to throw some sticks in the fire and see if I can get you guys to fight about something. Although it sounds like you guys are on the same page, so that might be a bit of a challenge. But
yeah, we'll see what you can do.
We'll see where this goes.
Well, so the idea that I was listening to your podcast, I forget which episode, and you guys were saying, you know, let's get some debates going. So I thought this would be a good debate because I'm always surprised at the number of people you talk to, especially people from Microsoft who are very doctrinaire. Thou shalt use declarative, that is ARM templates only because it's a good thing, or thou shalt use what I call procedural, and I think Scott calls imperative tools like the CLI or PowerShell commandlets because you need logic. And I've seen it drive a wedge and in clients that are unsure of what this means for them overall. And so it is a debate. And I don't know, Scott, you and I are, it sounds like we've got a few arrows in our back that we can talk about on doing this one way or the other. And we kind of don't have a debate. It's both, right?
I think to a certain degree, that's true. Once you've been doing some of this stuff a while, I think you can kind of take a step back, have some clarity, and approach the cloud with a little bit of realism. So I know I've worked with a lot of customers who where you walk in on day one and they go, you know what? I'm multi-cloud. I do AWS and Azure. So we're going to do everything in Terraform. Like, okay, cool. That's great. Let's do some Terraform. Love me some TCF. And they come back and they go, well, hold on. I'm trying to do this thing in Terraform and it doesn't actually have a Terraform resource for me. How do I do that? Well, you're going to go ahead and you're going to sling some ARM in there. And then they look at you and they go, huh? No, I'm multi-cloud. I didn't want to have to learn Azure. I just wanted to learn Terraform. It's like, sorry, couldn't get away from that. That wasn't possible. And they go, okay, great. All right. So teach us the little thing that we need to do to create just the little resource we need to do. You know, all right, here we go. We created it. And then you go and you fire off that deployment and they realize that they lost all of their state management because now they created something that wasn't actually a Terraform resource. It was just a generic resource and they can't track it anymore in Terraform. It's like, oh, wait, hold on. Maybe we should have taken a step back and learned about the clouds that we were going to use and understood that if we're going to adopt these things, we're going to have to just put some time and effort into understanding them and kind of seeing where they fall out. I think you can walk with your head in the sand and say, I'm only ever going to learn the Azure portal, or I'm only ever going to learn PowerShell or the CLI or ARM or whatever it is. Or you can take a step back and get hands-on with the stuff enough and realize that you just need to learn all three because the cloud is complicated and you're just going to have to learn it or pay somebody to do it for you.
Well, this isn't going to be much of a debate because I'm in violent agreement with you. You know, just to amplify what you're saying, it's as if when you use, so I'm not a fan of Terraform or any of the other, you know, what I call frameworks on frameworks on frameworks, insulating pads. The cloud is complicated, as you said, and therefore what you need to do is you really need to understand its fundamental model, right? Which it exposes via a set of APIs. You know, unlike hardware, where you could go put your hands on the thing and shove it into a rack, the only way you have of talking to, I'm familiar with AWS and Azure, so I'm limiting my comments to those. The only way you have of communicating with either of those two clouds are via its APIs, with some odd exceptions like the Snowball and so on. But really, it is the first true API-driven only computing environment, and people are migrating to it at enormous speed. And so, you know, it's sort of like you are driving a car when you're using something like Terraform with a pair of blinders on so that you can't see to your left or right, you know, just limiting your peripheral vision. You wouldn't do that deliberately, but people are, I think they're swayed by the appeal of the marketing message, which is I don't have to learn cloud, as you were saying, Scott. And then when they find themselves in the situation you describe, they lurch too far in the other direction and become a kind of mess that it can only happen when you're unaware of what it is you're actually doing. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But my point is that if you're in an API-driven environment, you need to understand those APIs and use them. And the lingua franca of APIs in AWS and Azure is JSON. You know, in many environments, in many, even the PowerShell commandlets or the Azure CLI or the AWS CLI or the AWS PowerShell commandlets, they just call the same APIs that everything else does.
They do. And I think that's something that people often lose sight of. They go, oh, hey, look, you know, I was able to click this button in the portal and it's something that I couldn't figure out how to do in PowerShell. It's like, well, hold on. If the portal could do it, PowerShell can. It just might not have a native wrapper for it today. So maybe we need to look at the Bingo. CLI, or maybe we need to get really good at working with bearer tokens and authenticating the REST API on our own and invoking our own web requests to go ahead and hit those RESTful endpoints and make things happen. I think one of the big ones I see there is, and it's kind of a basic one, but you run into it a lot when you're just getting started with Azure, is moving resources. So you try and move something between a resource group and people get confused. You know, why can't I change the region of it? Why isn't it magical? Why can't I rename it? Blah, blah, blah. But you start to figure out that, okay, hey, it's all fixed in this RESTful endpoint. So when I look at the actual REST endpoint that I pull in as my resource ID, it's a combination of my subscription ID, it's the resource group, it's the resource name, it's the resource provider, it's all these things. But if you go in the portal and you try and move a resource, there's just a couple check boxes, right? You go move, move, move. And then you sit and you wait like 20 minutes and you don't know what it's doing. You're like, huh, that's weird. Is it actually going to move anything? Is it going to tell me like what's going on? Well, it turns out that all it's doing is, you know, like you said, it's calling that REST API in the background. And there's just a RESTful service out there, validate move resources. And anytime you go to move a resource, it has to validate it first, and validation takes time. So if you know how to do it in REST, you can actually call the validator before you do your move to see if it's going to work. So you don't have to sit in the portal and wait 20 minutes. You can kind of fire and forget and come back a little bit later and say, oh, good, my job is done. Am I ready to move it? Yes, I can move it. And it already knows that state and you can kind of get on with your day. But you don't know that stuff's there unless you dig in a little bit. And
correct. What a wonderful example that is, because you're making the point that I, in my mind, comes out as the APIs in Azure and AWS are the bare metal interface to your computing environment. And when you look at it that way, you then decide how you're going to access those bare metal APIs, right? Sometimes the portal, it's a bottom-up decision, starting with the fact that those are the bare metal APIs. It's a bottom-up decision rather than a top-down decision. I'm going to start with this promised land of Terraform that is going to insulate me from having to understand these differing clouds. It's just such a very different process. So you've hit on another thing, Scott, that frankly is not as easy to solve in my mind. And that is that the APIs themselves, at least in the Azure case, are very badly documented. I don't know if you've spent a lot of time throwing things at your display like I have when you are looking at the type definitions for something, but they are just really, really, really thin.
Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry Software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry Software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email.
You haven't lived until you've gone and actually dug through those schemas for like ARM deployments.
Yes.
And tried to figure out what resource properties are actually accepted. I was rebuilding a class a couple of weeks ago for the AZ-104. And one of the things we want to talk about in there is ARM deployments, right? And, you know, obviously automation through ARM is a thing that's important if you're going to be an Azure administrator. And I started going down this really weird rabbit hole of normally when we teach ARM, we kind of stop at resource group deployments, but there's multiple deployment scopes that are available now, right? We can go way beyond that. You can do subscription deployments,
or even tenant.
You can do management group, and you can do tenant deployments. So I went down this whole crazy rabbit hole of just like a day of dissecting the schemas themselves to try and figure out what the heck I could do inside of each one, and just firing off things and seeing like, hey, can I do this? Can I do this? Ooh, that one doesn't work. Oh, that's not documented anywhere. Good luck. And you do, you kind of end up playing with it that way a little bit. I agree with you that Microsoft's documentation, I don't know that it's poor. I think it's overly verbose and not always prescriptive enough. So usually you want to know like how to do a thing and get in and get out. And you can't always do that with Microsoft's documentation. I think that's where AWS shines. Like I can walk in and I can say, hey,
yes,
I want to do this with CloudFormation. And if it's not in the docs, you can pretty much be guaranteed that it can't be done. And if it is in the docs, it's going to have step one, step two, step three, and you're going to be done. That's it. And on the Microsoft side, if it can be done, it's going to be steps one through 438. And please do not miss step 236, task two, paragraph B, whatever it was. Because if you did, you blew the whole thing up.
Yeah, they don't have what I call, and you know, I'm not an educational curriculum designer, so I'm not sure what the right term is for this, but their doc doesn't have what I call knowledge. It may have facts, such as, you know, here's the complete schema for the linked services type. for a workspace, but it doesn't good on you for finding out how to deploy a schedule. You're constantly looking for someone who's got some template that's within the zip code of what you're trying to do, if not directly over target. And you couple that with the fact that the, as you're saying, it's labyrinthine, you know, the documentation, they don't have any knowledge. That's my problem with the Azure Doc. There's just so much stuff thrown at you, some of it very badly written, improper grammar, that just makes reading it hard. So I want to tell a story. I complained on my blog, whined about this, frankly, at length, and tweeted the blog post at Microsoft CTO Mark Rusinovich, who was nice enough to respond and put me in touch with the ARM guys, who are, to their credit, they are aware of this. But the approach that they're taking is something that I'm a little worried about. They're going to provide more data about deployments. So when you do a new, there's a version of the commandlet new AZ resource group deployment and, you know, other deployment levels that will have a what if, that when you use the PowerShell what if parameter, will produce a list of new, changed, and modified resources. And so I've been testing it in preview. It's really a step forward, but it still doesn't get at this lack of knowledge in my mind about what do you really want to do. For example, how do you ever, except through experimentation, code depends on clauses? As I'm sure you know, if you code a child resource in a template, you have to put in an explicit depends on its parent. But other than making obvious depends on like an IP configuration dependent, making a VM deployment dependent on a configuration dependent on its IP configuration being there, how do you do complicated things like deploy solutions in log analytics workspaces or alert groups with alerts? It's just, there's a complete lack of knowledge. I know I'm going on and on and whinging, but I just don't understand how Microsoft itself manages to deploy product in managed services. They must have some secret, I'm wondering if they have some sort of secret capability that they haven't made public that allows them to generate these fantastically complicated templates with multiple dependencies on them. It's kind of my fantasy.
It's an interesting thing there. So lots of groups kind of come up with their own way of doing things. So there's that ARM API, that kind of back end, and then really ARM and that layer is just an abstraction, and it gives all of us a common interface so that we don't have to interact directly with resource providers, because resource providers are ultimately, you know, the things that are actually instantiated and going out and spinning up the resources. So what's happening is you've got that common API plane, but then each product group or product area, they've got their own resource provider and they're kind of like off doing their own thing. So you expect to have a certain, I always think of it as like a, maybe like a data contract or like a programming contract. Like I really do want a solid contract when I talk to the ARM APIs. And the unfortunate reality is you can't be guaranteed that the resource provider that you're talking to on the back end is going to follow that contract. So lots of the time what happens is like a new product comes out. I was reading your blog post and it was all about Azure SQL. There's been some fun things that happened there. Like when SQL MI came out, one of the things that happens inside of ARM is it supports these things called incremental deployments or complete deployments. So in an incremental deployment, I should be able to fire off the same deployment. And as long as all the resource properties are the same and the name of my resource, the location, all those things are the same, the ARM API should say, oh, hey, this thing is already here. It's already created. Let me skip and go to the next step. Well, when they released MI came out and did not respect that contract of saying, hey, here's an incremental deployment. So if you ran the same ARM template for an MI instance twice, and they fixed all this, but this was in the beginning. But when you ran that same template twice, it would blow up and it would say, I can't do that because it's already here. So you had to do it. You had to do a complete deployment every time, which kind of stinks with MI because that was, you know, a 4-hour turnaround time, you know, waiting for instances to turn up and do what they need to do. So there's things like that that happen within the resource providers themselves. I think kind of to that other thing of what does Microsoft do with some of their own deployments? I think you can look to some of the guidance that they put out there. So like Kubernetes, you've got AKS, Azure Kubernetes Service. So Kubernetes Service is actually spun up on the back end. As far as I know today, it still is. There's a project out there that everybody can go look up on GitHub. It's called AKS Engine. It used to be ACS Engine back in the old ACS days. But AKS Engine gives you a way to abstract, like effectively like a big ARM template. Like it's its own language around spinning up AKS clusters. But that's what Microsoft is using to bootstrap their Kubernetes clusters. So if you're a customer and you came in and you said, okay, so I'm doing containers today, but I'm not using Mobi as my runtime. I want to use something else. Well, Microsoft's answer to that is go ahead and use whatever you want. Here's AKS Engine. You can use the same exact tooling that we use to spin up and talk to the ARM APIs through our abstraction and do whatever you want. And that's kind of how they roll. And I think some of the other teams do that as well.
I'm almost speechless because what I think you're saying is that what we'd like is for Microsoft to not have these islands of development so that at the back end of the resource provider, the implementations are so completely different.
I want a contract, right? I want a common thing that I can land on. You know, you mentioned in the beginning that you're a fan of PowerShell. I hate that when Microsoft redid the Azure PowerShell commandlets, like when they were making the transition from Classic, from ASM over to ARM, that they broke like every PowerShell convention they could along the way, right? They stopped returning objects. They started returning big strings of JSON. It's like, okay, I get it. You're a REST API. That's fine. But you can still give me strongly typed objects. Like there's no reason that you don't have to do that other than, you know, kind of the team that owns it saying like, well, we really don't get PowerShell, but we know how to talk to the APIs. So here's what you've got. Go. You get used to it and you move on. But I'll tell you, it still bugs me that when I create something with the Azure PowerShell stuff, that all it does is spit back these big blobs of text that then I still have to manipulate more, especially when you get into like some of like the little properties and things like that. And yeah, you can still dot source it and get it there. And you know, you can go from JSON and, but it's just so much more like mental overhead when if you just came out, like if you just went to say Microsoft's PowerShell documentation and you did getting started with PowerShell, you wouldn't have any of the skills from getting started with PowerShell to be able to walk over and do Azure PowerShell. That part kind of annoys me.
Yeah,
it's
kind of
carried through all that stuff.
You know, you're how can I put it? It's worse than that because some things return real honest to goodness objects and other things return this mishmash that you're talking about. I could live with that. What I can't live with, and the thing that bothers me the most, is most of those objects, even the ones that are real PowerShell objects or that are returned, are undocumented. There's nothing that tells you, you know, what you have to do is you have to run the commandlet, then you have to save the object and pipe it to get member in order to figure out if it is an object, and if so, what it is. And then, you know, get the type name and start searching on the internet and maybe somewhere.
Someone else has blogged about it
and, you know, spent half of their life figuring out the intricacies of, you know, some obscure object that's inside a collection of other objects. The state of the documentation makes all of these inconsistencies from sort of minor annoyances into horrifically bad time sinks. You know, my favorite is the virtual machine size parameter that you often see coded in things like an Azure Data Factory integration, self-hosted integration runtime. If you search the basic stuff, like what is the list of properties that you can put into that parameter, you're not going to find it anywhere. You're not going to find it in the Microsoft.compute namespace. You're not going to find it in the doc on website. You know, what you have to do is you find eventually that there is a REST API that is covered by the AZ get VM size commandlet, And, you know, you get back a bunch of things that you have to wade your way through in order to figure out what to code in this one stinking parameter. It's just chaotic. So you can hear from my voice, I'm getting worked up, because you spend so much time trying to find things that should be what I call knowledge about how each of those back-end resource providers expect to be given data through an ARM template, even in a PowerShell, and I would argue even in a CLI environment, that your productivity is trashed. And it's all because of this balkanization of development that Microsoft permits. I don't get how AWS can be so consistent and have two pizza lunchbox teams, which they're famous for. I'm a little frustrated. Sorry,
no, gentlemen. We're all about cathartic experiences. If you've listened,
yes, I'm catharsizing here on your podcast. I appreciate the opportunity, gentlemen.
If you listen lately, it's about all we do. It's an interesting thing, but I hope that, you know, if somebody listens to this and they go like, "Wow, that sounds just like a real crap show," right? Like I don't even want to get near that. It's not that you don't have to get near it. I think it's a good dose of reality that you're going to have to go through a lot of frustration, and it's not a one-time thing. It's ongoing frustration with it. You're going to have to learn a bunch of new things that you probably never wanted to learn before. You're going to have to just get outside of your comfort zone consistently. And everybody needs to recognize that, like, something like Azure or AWS, like, they're really complicated, right? Like, I've heard it said a couple times that these things, right, these big public clouds that we're building, these are the most complicated systems really that are being put out there today, right? If you think about global scale, global orchestration, kind of all the other things that are going into them, like, they're truly massive undertakings and they're moving at a phenomenal pace, and all we're trying to do is like ride the wave and keep up. It's a thing.
Yeah. So, you know, on that complexity thing, what I often tell clients is imagine the scale in either AWS or Azure of event logging. Just imagine it. The services are compelled to get that right because that's how they bill you. But just the sheer volume, I don't care how compressible text is, the sheer volume of event logging is on a scale I don't think we've ever seen before. And it blows me away. I think it's a massive achievement that we've been able to do this and provide the kind of scalability and performance that we have. I'm with you, Scott. This is just unlike anything we've ever seen before. I don't think it's hopeless. I may have sounded like I thought it was hopeless, but what I really am concerned about and is the impact on adoption, because we're moving from, you know, guys like you that have been around this a long time to enterprises, particularly Microsoft's customer base, that are now, you know, we're now beyond the early adopters. We're now into enterprises of all sizes adopting the cloud. And, you know, the IT guys who are the ones who are experimenting with cloud, they, in the absence of sort of very clear thinking about how to manage your relationship, as I would put it, with the APIs in Azure, they do stupid things, all right? Because this is out of their, you know, sphere of reference. It's not VMware. It's definitely not VMware. It's not data center. And it's very difficult, for example, to get, suppose you're, you know, a mid-sized financial institution and you're migrating, you want to migrate to the cloud for all of those benefits that we know exist, right? What are you going to do first? Well, the first thing you're going to do is figure out how to get ExpressRoute running. And you are likely to, in that design, implement forced tunneling, right? And you're going to say it's a security reason and it's a security design. And that way, all our traffic from our internal network and our cloud network gets to be inspected by our edge devices. Guess what that means? That means you can't, if you don't have a KMS server, key management server in your infrastructure, you can't activate an IaaS VM in Azure without creating a route directly to the internet for that VNet in
yeah.
which that
yeah you got to talk to Microsoft's KMS servers, right? And it's those rough it's right. it's a rough edge because it's documented. It is. It's documented and it's out there. If you know where to go look for that one thing, you're like, hey, I can't activate my server in Azure, but you don't because nobody told you about it up front. Like there, you would love to just see in the whole forced tunneling discussion that. If you're going to run, like I would love to see a consolidated article of here's all the services that you're going to run that need to be able to talk to their own management planes. IaaS VMs always need yeah. to be able to talk to KMS Core. You know, if I deploy ASE, like done that with financial institutions a couple times, oh, there's mm-hmm. a whole management plane there. You know, like yeah. all of a sudden you block it and you go like, oh man, what have we done? FSI is always fun.
Exactly. We're asking... In the case of Azure, where there's this lack of sort of consolidated knowledge brought about, I think you've constructed the exact reason why, Scott. It is because the resource manager talks on our behalf to these, you know, balkanized back-end teams who each have their own view of the world. If that's the way we are, then it has to be then that people don't pick a single tool and bet on it. That's sort of my conclusion, is you have to be flexible. We were talking about this before you started the recording. We thought we were going to be debating, but we're really, as we discovered, on the same page. Because you can't be doctrinaire. You can't say, I'm going to do everything in declarative, or I'm going to do everything in procedural, or I'm going to do everything in imperative, or worst among those choices in my mind, I'm going to use something other than the tools provided by the cloud vendor. I just think that the reality is, and this is hard for people, it means not only do they have to learn something new, they have to learn several somethings new.
As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro.
One of the things that the company I work for, we do, we write a lot of guidance for customers and for partners, like Microsoft partners, like if you've ever seen like a partner playbook or things like that. So we try and teach businesses how to build a business on the cloud. Like if somebody came in and they said, I would like to be an Azure MSP for migrations. Great, we've got a playbook for you. And certainly part of that's technical, where you know it's like, okay, here's all the things you're going to need to know, CLI and PowerShell and ARM and all the stuff. But the other part we spend a lot of time on is the skills that you're going to need to get there and trying to get people the reality that, you know what, that might be like one magical unicorn who you spend a whole lot of money on, or it might be a couple of little like baby unicorns who aren't fully grown yet, who you're going to turn into unicorns over time. You've got this skill gap in there and you've got to figure that out and see where it comes across. And I think that's sometimes where you get sucked into the Terraform or the Ansible or whatever else it is, because it feels like you can kind of like just jump across whatever that mode is in front of you a little bit quicker, right? Rather than actually having to build a bridge and get all the way to the other side. I don't know. It gets weird sometimes. Like, have you ever run into Microsoft's, the AZBB project, Azure Building Blocks?
No.
All right. So, you know, we talked about Terraform and things like that, having an abstraction layer on top of ARM with all these kind of wrappers and things like that. Well, it turns out that Microsoft actually kind of built their own thing for ARM. And I've seen like MCS use this with customers and stuff because, oh, hey, ARM's a little bit too hard to figure out. So what if I could, rather than having a big ARM template that deployed a bunch of virtual machines, what if I could have a smaller block of JSON that just said, hey, here's a VM, I want three of them, I want them to be Linux VMs that run Ubuntu 18.04 LTS, and I want them to be in this VNet and this subnet. And that's your entire JSON block rather than that 700 line ARM template. And then you go ahead and fire that off. And what it is, it's a generator. So it's sitting in the background. It's taking the JSON. It's translating it into a bigger block of JSON in the ARM template. And then it's helping you execute deployments. Like, well, hold on. If you had to simplify your own deployment plane to make it easier for customers, maybe we can just go back to like the beginning and see if we can't simplify that a little bit.
Yeah, that's what was in my head. It's like doing your own Terraform. We were talking about Microsoft being competitive before we started recording. I wonder if that isn't just a, let's do something, let's throw a bone to the Terraform world and, you know, have an entry there. You know, I think somewhere still in Microsoft's active SKUs, there's a Fortran or a COBOL compiler somewhere, you know, because there's five people left on the planet who are doing that. Maybe they're still supported on 16-bit Windows 7 running DOS, you know, in a VM. Microsoft needs to solve this problem holistically, I would argue. And my recipe is, if you're going to have, you know, a heterogeneous set of resources behind the resource manager, which is the only way we can interface with them, right? That's the design.
That's
right?
It. Is that you've got the contract, right?
That's
common
it.
Layer.
Yep. I love your idea. It's a contract. That contract needs, you know, every section documented, every comma placed in the right way to make sure that the, you know, the contract is a fully enforceable and unbreakable deal. If AWS can do it, I think Microsoft certainly can. It's not about capability. It seems to be about will. That would make it so much easier for enterprises to solve this riddle of what skills do I need and, you know, which people in my organization are going to move into this sort of DevOps world and which people are, you know, going to stay in the data center as we know it. You know, it's very hard for the IT guys. It's also hard for the developers. Let me tell you, I'm working with a client now who has some legacy .NET applications, and getting them from TFS to a Git style work process it's a lot of work.
It's a whole new skill.
It's a whole new skill. Yes, it's a whole new skill.
The first time you actually figure out like what a rebase is in a Git repo, you're like
yeah, exactly. Or how cheap branches are, you know, right? You want a branch? Go ahead. You know, have three. They're free, right? So, you know, as far from a debate, I feel like we're on exactly the same page. I love this idea you've come up with, a contract, because that's what's missing, really. In a world where the APIs are the only way that you can talk to the things you need to, then that contract has got to be ironclad. I call it knowledge. You call it a contract. But looked at that way, it doesn't matter what tool set you use, right? Because you have the contract to tell you what will happen and what will occur if you do X, you'll get Y result. And that allows you the sort of freedom that people are used to, I think, to pick their tool set. Because, you know, different minds work differently, right? Some people are natches in ARM templates. And I was talking to this guy in Finland the other day. He's like, I think he thinks in braces, you know, and other people like me, I prefer being able to do a loop instead of a copy and having to worry about the copy index identifiers. And for me, a loop in a procedural language is nothing like a loop in an ARM template, right? Because one is just creating additional copies of a resource and another can have logic in it.
Yeah, you've just abstracted it and kind of thrown it to, you know, that higher level that you need it to be. Why don't we do this? We're kind of running short on time, but let's end on a high note. So you're a fan of Azure PowerShell. You mentioned that the documentation from Microsoft can be a little bit hard to consume sometimes, right? So do you have a favorite resource for going out other than maybe kind of, like you said, banging your head against the wall and keep throwing stuff against it to see what sticks? Do you have a favorite blog or learning provider or other resource that you turn to? You know, do you go to Reddit or the tech community or whatever it is?
No, I usually hack at it myself. So in PowerShell, I blogged about this the other day. Feels like the other day, it was probably 6 months ago. My survival kit for dealing with Azure in the AZ commandlets is GetMember. What I do when I don't understand something, what I'll do when I don't understand something in ARM is I will try and create an object. So my process is, if I don't get it at all from the doc, I'll try and rework the deployed template that the portal generated. And if I'm able to create, you know, sort of a half complete or even base object with that, then I'll look at the PowerShell commandlets that apply to that And there's almost always a get for that object, you know, like get AZVM or whatever it happens to be. If you can do a get, you assign it to a variable and then you do a get member on that variable. Then you'll see the type name, you'll see, you know, what the methods are, that at least those that have been exposed into PowerShell. And that 9 times out of 10 is usually enough. So in my process, I try hard to make sure that I don't use the portal for other than the sort of base object in order to figure out what you could do, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I totally get it.
I try and be, right? So you have to use the portal, but I try not to ever deploy from the portal, if you know what I mean. I always try and deploy from a repo or from the PowerShell command line, if possible. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, yeah. I'm always interested in how people approach it and what they find that's helpful out there, right? Like some people like to just bang against it. Some people, you know, they're like, oh, I've got this other thing over here, this person I follow on Twitter, whatever it is. So
yeah, but search is your friend at the end of the day. I'm searching in objects.
Well, that's how we all do our jobs, right? We're all architects. So Google is our best friend. Or sorry, Bing.
Yes.
DuckDuckGo, whatever it is. All right. Well, great. We appreciate the time today, Alex.
Oh, it was so much fun. I hope you feel better. And Ben, I hope you're okay.
I'm still hanging in over here.
Yeah, he's been listening.
Yep. I've just been consuming this one. So yeah, thanks for joining us. I'm sure you guys could keep going easily for another 2 or 3 minutes, but we'll wrap it up for today. And maybe we'll even get you on again sometime.
Cool. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Stay healthy. Wash your hands.
Take care. Yeah. And I hope you guys survive well, too.
Thanks. We'll talk to you guys later.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.